Our guest today has been here many times. He's been here actually wearing many hats. He's been here as the author of a wonderful book about the album Dusty in Memphis. He's actually been here in his semi-corporate role as Vice President for Education at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we decided we needed somebody on the show who's just released their second solo album after years in a band, and we figured, God, we got to get this guy. And Warren Zanes has joined us today. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
And I must say, I enjoy all of your roles when you come to talk to us. But what a sweet little album this is! Tell me about putting this together with all that other stuff that you've been doing.
It was a challenge. The first challenge was getting permission to leave the two little kids. And then I had to get permission to leave the office. And then I got my way down to Nashville with a total of 5 days to record. But that's actually not as slight a number as it at first seems if you got the right guys working with you.
And you worked with Daniel Tashian, who's a wonderful singer-songwriter in his own right, wonderful producer. And Brad Jones, another producer. You can, had multiple producers.
Yeah, I had guys who think fast in the studio.
Yeah.
And so each morning I'd wake up at 6:30 and make sure that by 10 o'clock I had at least 3 songs to record, and then would just start knocking them out. So there wasn't time to overthink this. And in the Pro Tools age, that's a benefit.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear them. Absolutely, to 2-track here today and how they go down live in our studio. What do you want to do?
I'd like to do Everyone Here's Made of Thunder, which actually is one that emerged from, I think, finally spending a few years in an office. And if you think office workers aren't filled with feelings and passions, you haven't worked in an office. So this is kind of a tribute to the folks that I had to rethink once I took a real job.
Cubicle culture. Warren Zanes is playing live for us today, and that is one of the first songs that that jumped off the disc for me. And it's so succinct, too, Warren. I love that.
2 minutes, 7 seconds.
We need more of that. How does writing this, I mean, we found a little bit about how recording this kind of fit into your life, but how do you keep a guitar under your desk? I mean, we should say that Warren has a couple of day jobs. You teach at Case Western Reserve.
Yep.
And you are currently the Vice President of Education at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Are there daily duties involved with that?
Yeah, there's a lot of daily duties, and they snuck an 8:30 to 5:30 job by me in the guise of a 9-to-5 job, so they got an extra hour out of me. So clearly, when it comes to figuring the job and figuring writing, you're exactly right. There is a guitar under the desk, and when somebody walks by and I'm playing the guitar, the beauty of that job is they assume I'm working. So I did get to do some writing and. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame paid for it, which is a good thing.
Now, the first album had a lot to do with putting old girlfriends to rest, or at least into songs. Is there a theme involved with People That I'm Wrong For?
A little bit, and the title speaks a mouthful. I finally realized that I'm not the only guy who, in airports, thinks he finds the person who's perfect for him, or even at stoplights, looks in the car next to him and feels like there's a perfect match, and can do this several times in the course of a day. And inevitably, these are the people that I'm wrong for, but how much time we spend up in our heads, dreaming of what we could have with another person. There's a lot of illicit thinking that's a part of everyday life, and that's interesting stuff to me. How do you keep your act together when the human mind does this?
I'm really glad you brought that to the front, because I'm sure we can all confess to that. This is not does not mean we're not perfectly happy in our lives, right?
Absolutely.
It has to do with the fantasy of the unknown and where it could go next.
It's not the desire for a trap door.
Very good, very good. Is there a song in particular that speaks to that?
I think we could play Fool the Moon next, and it's a tune that gets at that. And, there's a particular, it's the second verse where the protagonist, if you will, is, lying in a hotel room and just thinking of all the things that they, would like to do but never will. All the fantasies, all the ambitions, all the stuff that crowds the mind that will never live outside of the mind. The smell of gasoline and brand new tires, the souvenirs that they'll sell to you in every hellhole you pass by. And now I've got a room, and I will lie and think of things that I never dare to do, the things that I never try. Outside this room, let's try to get rich or hit my stride. Line the walls with gold, and every night I light up all of the rooms. Just passing through. I was there with you. A lot of things, but
Fool of the Moon, one of the new songs from our guest Warren Zanes, from People That I'm Wrong For. And these people in the room, clearly something is going right. So can you introduce everybody in the band?
On guitar, we have Brian Ewald. Well, perhaps I should back up and say that these guys are collectively known as Starbelly. And I was introduced to them by Eric Amble, from who plays in Steve Earle's band, but also plays in 100 other bands. He said, you need guys who can sing and you need guys who can play, call Starbelly. And Starbelly consists of, on guitar, Brian Ewald.
Hello.
On drums, Greg Schroeder.
Hello.
On bass, Dennis Shockett.
Hello.
And on keyboard, still known as the new guy, we have Rob. And Rob, please pronounce your last name for me.
Cosentino.
Thank you.
Rob, the new guy. So maybe you should tell people a little bit about what your job at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame consists of. And you're also teaching. You've been in academia for a while, but teaching various art history, art courses. Are you able to kind of hone that in on rock and roll courses nowadays?
It is all rock and roll these days. The past three seminars that have found me the professor, one is on the subcultures of popular music. One was on the emergence of rock and roll. I was really looking at the mid-1950s. That was kind of an across-the-arts perspective. Actually, it even went beyond the arts. I was looking at, you know, what was happening in photography with Robert Frank and the Americans, but at the same time, the Family of Man exhibit came into MoMA. Edward Steichen did it. Jackson Pollock was being written up in Life magazine. Playboy magazine was born. Mad magazine was born. And rock and roll was born. All this stuff was happening at the same time. So in that class, which is my favorite, perhaps I'm giving that away, you look at the pure strangeness of rock and roll's birth. And I think there's ways to better understand rock and roll by looking at something like Mad magazine or Playboy magazine, because there's some kind of zeitgeist there.
Now, that sounds really, really fascinating, but I got to tell you, where I'm looking at the course catalog, the subcultures of rock would interest me. What would some of the examples of those be?
Well, we're looking, you know, you begin with the obvious, because though subculture is a term we kick around a lot of the students weren't sure what one was. So you begin with the obvious, and you talk about, like, goth culture. You go to metal culture. You look at jam band culture. And really, it comes down to how do people connect their identity to the scene that they're in, you know? And it's a classic path of development for particularly adolescents. They hit that point where identification with the parents is no longer a viable possibility, and they start looking for, in fact, the very thing that will the most penetrate their parents' psyche in a negative way, and they enter a subculture. I remember a kid that I went to do my undergrad with. He came in the fall wearing polo shirts and Madras pants, and he was pure goth within one semester. It's amazing, you know. But the students identify what's the process once they understand how pervasive it is.
One of the things I recently read in an interview you talked about, which may have to do with an interview you did with Hal Blaine, the drummer, is something that fascinates me from my seat here and watching bands come through here, is how people deal with the fall from rock and roll stature. And this can be anything from just being in a band to being a huge star. There's something about that pinnacle of being on stage and what happens that is hard for people to deal with. And you yourself have had an interesting story, I think, in dealing with that.
Well, you touch upon something that is pervasive in my line of work, is people who didn't handle when the career went from being up at the apex and in the spotlight to that changing, you know, and somebody else coming into the spotlight. That's a really hard transition to make. And most do not do it gracefully. And it sometimes surprises you the level of bitterness. And it's hard not to make the equation that the more successful you are, the greater the chances for bitterness. Despite the fact that we think fame will answer all our questions, it actually creates a whole new set of problems. But what I also see is people who have gone through, you know, they've been in the spotlight, spotlight's been turned off, bitterness, and then they come to a more soulful understanding, and it returns to gratitude. And that's when I start to have fun with these people. And that's where a Hal Blaine, for instance, nobody's got more, you know, top 10 songs than Hal Blaine. I mean, he's behind the
session drummer
on Beach Boys, on Phil Spector recordings, on the Mamas and the Papas, on Frank Sinatra. He, along with the Wrecking Crew, they were just on everything coming out of California. And then things change. A singer-songwriter moment comes along, and it's not cool to use session guys. And who wouldn't be a little bit bitter? But he's definitely full circle. And he looks at it and says, what a wild ride. It's amazing the guys who I get to sit down and talk with. So my job is a gift on that level.
I've heard you talk about compartmentalizing the different aspects of your life, and there's the out-on-the-road rock star guy, there's the professor, there's the guy who works at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But I noticed one of your first gigs on your tour with the band is going to be at the Hall of Fame, so it's kind of going to, it's got to come together there.
It's easy. I book the room.
Indeed. Warren Zanes is our guest, and we're getting a preview of that concert today with this great band. What do you want to do next?
I'd like to do Carrying Me, Carrying You, which is it's really, you know, just another love song. Here's the boy who put you down. Did you try to keep him near? Across towns, dropping whispers in his ears. Is there someone in this room? Where's the love you said you'd found? Or did you leave it on the bus? Is it in the terminal downtown, or in a luggage rack you trust? Yeah.
Carrying Me, Carrying You, another one from Warren Zane's new one, People That I'm Wrong For. Warren, you're also part of a rock and roll subgroup, which is, of course, the brother bands who've been here, going back to country music, things like the Stanley Brothers and Phil and Don and Dave and Phil Alvin with the Blasters, and you and your brother Dan with the Del Fuegos. And often you hear stories about the brothers not getting along. And what's the situation with you and Dan?
We've done our time there.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've finished up with that. Yeah, it's a great trade-off. Not to speak in the obvious, but there's an energy to be derived from two brothers on stage, and there are resultant problems. For the Del Fuegos, the trade-off worked up to a certain point. And as is typical, it came down to, both of us looking at the creative pie, most of which was Dan's, and me saying, I want a bigger slice. And he was saying, find another pie, which, was an ugly moment for us. It was one thing that did help was when I went into academia, and I went hard into academia for 12 years, and he kind of drifted out of music and then came back as a family artist. We found ourselves in different worlds, but we have moments where we intersect. For instance, I did a big Lead Belly program, and I involved Dan closely in it. And we were talking almost every day, and it was Lead Belly focused. And that, there's a lot of healing to be done, not to get into the therapeutic terminology, but it's been great for us. We find those moments of intersection, but the beauty is we're not stepping into the same van every morning.
No, and you obviously have tangentially gone off in way, way different directions, too, which is, I just assumed you got into academia because you wanted to answer that question once and for all, is rock and roll folk music?
If you don't get the illusion there, I'm not going to tell you what it is.
All right.
Go on. You sound like you're on the cusp.
No, that was I just wanted to throw that in. And if we can't follow it up, where are we going to do? Anyway, it has to do with a Miller Beer ad. That may have been the undoing or the doing of the Del Fuegos. We're not quite sure.
It was a different time, I will say this, in terms of bands doing commercials. What you can get away with now is altogether different from the mid-80s, and yes, doing a commercial at that time was the kiss of death. You weren't supposed to do iPods, and you definitely weren't supposed to do beer.
Indeed. What do you want to finish up with?
I'd like to do a song called Things Nobody's Named Yet, and this is one of my favorites on the record, just because I work in a museum, and the song is about another kind of museum. In the typical museum, every object has a label, tells you a date, tells you, its origins, who it's associated with. And, I was just sitting writing a song, and I thought, boy, all the most meaningful stuff in life, it doesn't even have a name. You couldn't do a tag, on it. When something big happens for you, inevitably you go beyond the territory of language itself. So the song's really about this idea of a museum that holds all things that nobody's named yet. So I hope that makes some kind of sense. It was pretty abstract for me, and then it just turned into a rock song. But ultimately, it was for my wife.
Place I go when you're in the room and something changes, and I can't say that anyone has found a name for the way that you move through all these strangers. I pull your phone. cheap seats never faze me. But I got free and found a plan that included me. What do you call the soul who saved me?
Things that nobody's named yet, and it turns into a great little rock and roll song. Warren Zane's our guest, and that's another one from People That I'm Wrong For, which is out on Dual Tone. Warren, thank you, as always, for being a presence here.
Thank you for having me.
It's always fun. Warren Zane's our guest, and we'll be back in a moment here on The World Cafe.